Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. An Alaska Native Corporation's shareholders are questioning contracts that one of its subsidiaries has to run migrant detention facilities. That's as the Trump administration's immigration crackdown continues. NANA Regional Corporation subsidiary Akima has faced accusations in recent national news stories about the poor treatment of migrants at detention facilities it runs. Jackie Catalina Schaefer is a NANA shareholder and former board member. She says there's been a lack of transparency from NANA leadership about the contracts.
You know, we are Inupiaq from Northwest Arctic that are founded on Inupiaq Iliqasait, which is our foundation of who we are. And those values do not align with any of this type of work.
A small but vocal group among NANA's 15,000 Inupiaq shareholders agree with her. Schaefer helped craft a survey to gauge how other shareholders felt. More than three quarters of the roughly 100 respondents said they did not want a NANA subsidiary providing migrant detention services, even if it was profitable work. As one survey respondent put it, not all money is good money. Akima and its subsidiaries compromise NANA's federal contracting branch, and they generate a majority of the Alaska Native Corporation's overall profits, according to information presented at a recent shareholder meeting. Charts presented at the meeting showed that Akima's annual revenue is often higher than that of NANA's Red Dog Mine, one of the world's largest zinc mines, located in northwest Alaska. NANA executives told shareholders at a meeting that Akima brought in about $2.2 billion last year. Some of those who responded to the survey were unbothered by the recent reports, which they called fake news. NANA's communication staff and executive leadership team did not respond to multiple requests for comment. The chair of its board of directors declined to comment. Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. In the month after the University of Alaska Board of Regents decided to scrub mentions of diversity, equity, and inclusion, these words have gradually disappeared from university webpages. That decision was in response to increasing pressure from the Trump administration to cut DEI. But critics of the decision are concerned about the lack of transparency in the process. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports.
The Board of Regents made a lot of decisions during its regular two-day meeting in Soldotna in February, but one that got a lot of attention from the public wasn't actually on the agenda.
Are we ready for this?
On the second day of the meeting, the board chair, Ralph Seekins, suddenly brought up a motion to remove mentions of diversity, equity, and inclusion from university websites.
We need to make the motion to approve this.
He asked Regent Seth Church to read it.
I move the Board of Regents direct the president to take all necessary actions to comply with recent federal executive orders and applicable agency guidance.
But this motion wasn't on the agenda. Since it wasn't on the agenda, people weren't able to comment on it during public testimony. And members of the UA community are wondering if the board violated the Alaska Open Meetings Act. KTOO looked into the issue and found that the board followed the letter of the law, but their process did leave the public in the dark until after the decision was made. The law ensures governing bodies like the Board of Regents conduct their business in the open, says Savannah Fletcher, a Fairbanks-based public interest attorney. She says suddenly bringing up the motion in the meeting means no one in the public saw it coming.
No one had the chance to weigh in, and people still may not have heard what actually happened on the meeting because they haven't heard the recording, whereas they might have called in and listened in real time if they knew this was on the line.
Under the Act, the public needs to be informed of the time and place of any public meeting before it happens. Fletcher said in an email that governing bodies generally include agenda items in public notice. She wrote that not doing so makes it meaningless to tell the public a meeting is coming up. The agenda was posted ahead of the meeting. However, a motion to scrub DEI from the university websites was never included. The way it ended up on the agenda is allowed under the board's bylaws, but it's complicated. The board can change the agenda in two ways. It can happen at the beginning of the meeting when the agenda is approved. It can also happen afterward if the change is approved by a vote of the members. In this case, there seemed to be no vote to change the agenda, but a university spokesperson says instead of voting, the board approved the agenda change by an act of consent. That means no one objected to bringing the motion forward for discussion. Regent Church declined to comment on the motion. Chair Seekins also did not respond to a request for comment from KTOO. Albiona Salimi, the student regent and the only dissenting vote, says she wasn't expecting to vote on a motion so soon.
I had a very strong suspicion that it would come up, obviously because it was a big topic that had come up within that time. I personally did not know or think that it would be coming to a motion so quickly.
Salimi says the lack of public testimony made the vote difficult for her. But Salimi says she's glad to see how people in the university community are responding to the motion. University organizations that represent staff and student leaders also passed resolutions condemning the decision and the manner in which it was carried out. The public interest attorney, Fletcher, says the public still has a right to know about agenda items, even if issues were time sensitive.
We want government to be transparent. And with transparency, there sometimes are delays, because if you want to vote on something and it's time sensitive, you still have to comply with some kind of notice, even if it's that there's a notice for an emergency special meeting. The public needs to have a chance to know about it and then accordingly comment on it.
The Board of Regents didn't break the law, but Fletcher says if it had, it could easily fix it. All it would have to do is put the motion to a vote again in a meeting where all parts of the Open Meetings Act are followed. Fletcher herself is against the decision, but she says she understands why the board made it.
I don't think it was the right move, but I'm also not the person in that room that has the fear of all this funding for so many professors and grad students and undergraduate research getting pulled. It seems like they were trying to soften the blow with commentary about still supporting Alaska Native culture and the Alaska Native community within our university system. But those seem to be talking out of two sides of your mouth, if you ask me.
University leadership said these decisions protect the federal funding Trump is threatening to pull. In the motion and communications following it, the board continues to say it's committed to non-discrimination. In the meantime, the university has already renamed different offices and committees as a result of the Board of Regents' decision. The University of Alaska Southeast is reviewing more than 160 mentions of DEI as well. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And Ketchikan is currently facing a controversial restructuring of the island's elementary schools, and in recent weeks, multiple school board members and the district superintendent have resigned. The principal of Ketchikan High School joined other school district officials from across the state to testify in front of the Alaska House and Senate on Monday. He was there to tell lawmakers that the kids are not all right. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more. And a content warning, this story talks about suicide and might be disturbing for some listeners.
Rick Dormer is the principal of Ketchikan High School. He also leads the statewide association for high school principals.
Every school needs quality leadership and quality teachers, and Alaska's losing their educational leaders at a very rapid rate.
He was speaking at a joint hearing with the State House and Senate, their education committees.
We are trending the wrong direction.
Dormer was one of a handful of officials and association heads from school districts like the Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage, and Galena. The testimony comes as lawmakers are deciding how much the state is going to put towards education funding next school year. For years now, Alaska schools have faced stagnant state funding, rising costs, and budget uncertainty. Many, nearly all, have had to cut back resources. And Ketchikan is in the process right now of restructuring the island's elementary schools and combining some classes to help reduce the budget deficit. The plan at every stage has been met with protests, and community members have even put together their own alternative plans to cut staff and combine facilities that they think would be lower impact. But it's not just facilities being affected. Dormer says schools need resources for students' mental health.
Unfortunately, I can come to you and tell you that just the last month, Ketchikan lost a teen by suicide, and we had another teen attempt to take their life, was life flighted out via suicide. They're going to be okay. It's just so real, and it's right in front of us.
Alaska leads the nation in teen suicides, according to data from the U.S. Department of Justice. Dormer says that roughly 40% of K-High students have reported feeling so anxious, tense, scared every day for 2 weeks in a row that they couldn't finish their work. So sad or hopeless that they didn't want to do the things they normally like doing.
And we also believe these statistics are consistent across the state.
K-High has a social worker on staff to help students navigate the depression minefield of being a high schooler. The position is funded by a federal grant.
That's for over 500 students. We have one social worker.
The National Association for School Social Workers generally recommends schools have at least one social worker for every 250 students. Dormer says most schools in Alaska can't afford that. They can't afford to hire counselors or social workers right now at all, and they can't rely on federal grants.
As a principal, I can tell you that hiring a counselor is about impossible at this time. And then if you have the funds in the first place, How can you find them, and then how can you retain them?
Retention came up a few times in Dormer's testimony. It was a big part of nearly every testimony during the joint session. Officials said Alaska has a problem keeping teachers, and continuous budget uncertainties are compounding that. Like, another testifier referenced University of Alaska Anchorage research showing that high turnover was costing districts an extra $20,000 per teacher to recruit, hire, and train. And retaining administrators is also a problem. In a matter of weeks this spring, Ketchikan's school board president, another school board member, and the district superintendent resigned. Dormer came to Ketchikan in 2022 after over a decade leading the high school in Petersburg. But he said he's now actively interviewing for other jobs, too, outside of Alaska, in Oregon.
Because if I go to Oregon, I can get a defined benefit package. I can have higher wages. I can have a lower cost of living. And I don't have to take the time and expense to get on a Boeing jet to see my family. It is a challenge. We want to stay. I want to stay. But we're also highly educated professionals. We have personal goals. We have professional goals. And I can tell you that there are a lot of options out there.
Dormer told lawmakers that Alaska's teens deserve high-quality teachers and administrators, ones who want to stick around. There's a bill before the state Senate right now that would increase per-student funding for Alaska schools by $1,000. It already passed the House. If it makes it all the way through the Senate, it'll end up on Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And Alaska's U.S. senators have co-sponsored a resolution to keep the U.S. Postal Service as an independent agency and not privatize it. Senator Lisa Murkowski says the Postal Service helps bind the nation together and is vital in a state as vast as Alaska. She said weeks ago that she's worried about what changes to the Postal Service could mean for Alaska's bypass mail subsidy.
It is unique to Alaska. And when people are looking for efficiencies, sometimes they just look and say, well, there's not a lot of people there and it costs a lot of money. And so this can go. This is where you need a very strong and united delegation to defend the programs, defend the purposes, and defend the people.
Bypass mail is a postal service program that makes it cheaper to transport pallets of goods from Anchorage and Fairbanks to rural Alaska. The program costs the Postal Service more than $130 million a year. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 51 degrees and sunny this afternoon. Tomorrow looks mostly sunny as well with a high of 53. Friday night, rain may come in. The weekend looks rainy. This is KTOO.